episode 29, live on Twitch, twitch.tv/digitaldaysgaming. I'm joined, as always, by Michael Swick.
Hi, how's it going? This is, what, 3 months? Every week, I'm just going to keep escalating how long it's been in quarantine. It's six months?
You keep making me record on Mondays, and you say it's the only way you know when your week starts.
It's helped. It's helped, definitely. How's it going?
All right, and we have another guest. He's gracefully taken the time to hang out with us. You probably have heard him already because I've talked about him periodically, but Paris Lilly from Gamertag Radio.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm finally glad that we're able to get this done. I know we've been talking about it for a while.
Yeah, it's a, you know, you jinxed yourself when you said March was a busy travel month.
I know. Right? I know all my plans are just done. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right, well, let's get the formalities out of the way. Paris, who are you? What do you do? And what do you want to tell people you do?
What do I want to tell people I do? So it's different than what I do. So Paris Lilly is my name. I've been a gaming podcaster. So I guess to say, I can't even talk. I'm sorry. But I've been podcasting since 2006. I'm currently a part of Gamertag Radio, which was founded by Danny Pena, a.k.a. Godfrey, which has been around since 2005. I joined Gamertag Radio in 2013, and it's just been a great brotherhood between the three of us, myself, Peter Toledo, and Danny Pena. Shout out to Mandy. She's no longer part of the show. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, you know, we've been podcasting for a long time, and you know, I'm just the loudmouth guy on Twitter. That's kind of my reputation at this point. I guess what I would want people to know about me is I'm not afraid to give my opinion on whatever the subject may be. For obviously, gaming is a pretty big part of what I do online, but you know, I can dabble into politics, pop culture, sports, and everything else. But like I said, I just like to talk, I guess.
Yeah. Just like I mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we had Khalif on, there are significant people that are pillars for the foundation of Digital Days, and Paris is one of them. He served as a very, very good sounding board and a very good mentor for me on what we should be doing, and then he helped me through the transition that was very much of a challenge. So publicly, and I know I tell you this all the time and you keep brushing it off, but publicly, I thank you for being there for me, especially in certain random times when I would just go pretty much nuts for a couple minutes. So,
and I would say to that, I do brush it off because it really just comes down to this. We're all in this together. We're all a part of this crazy gaming industry. I don't know. What do you call it? Influencer thing, whatever the hell is we're supposed to be called. But you know, we're all in it together, man. I mean, Danny, like I bring up Danny a lot. I wouldn't be doing this without Danny. Danny helped me early on when I was trying to figure out my way in this space. And, you know, there's all the, like you mentioned Khalif earlier, who you had on. He's been a great influence in me on as well. So we're all in this together. We're all helping each other. We all have our moments where we got to lean on somebody for advice or need help with something. So if I were able to help you in any way, you know, glad to help.
He doesn't like to push it himself, but Paris is doing a really good job lately with content creation on his YouTube channel. I know he's anxiously waiting for some cyberpunky game to come out.
I don't know. Might have heard of it.
Yeah, anytime all Dave right. is like, Michael, you're really excited for Cyberpunk. I'm just like, not as excited as this man. You're like my go-to. And anytime there's Cyberpunk news, I load up your Twitter account like immediately after some Cyberpunk news drops.
Well, do you mind if I talk about that really quick? Because it's funny you bring up the whole excitement thing. So to anyone, you know,
I mean, Paris doesn't do anything controversial on Twitter anyway, so it's fine.
But, you know, the Cyberpunk thing, for anyone that doesn't know. So a couple years ago, I'm that guy that went to the Cyberpunk demo at E3, and Danny's such a great help. He had the great idea to film my reaction when I came out. And that reaction went viral. And because it went viral, I got to know a lot of people at CD Projekt Red. You know, we're like Twitter friends and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you had that whole year in between E3 2018, E3 2019. So it kind of was building up. So at E3 2019, long story short, I wasn't sure I was even going to be able to attend. So I booked the very last appointment on the last day of E3 to go see the Cyberpunk demo at E3 2019. So because of that, there was almost this weird anticipation that was built up. And I was kind of talking to some of the CDPR people behind the scenes. They're like, are you going to make it? Are you coming? Are you coming? I was like, I hope. I don't know. I want to make it, right? Because I really literally until the night before didn't know I was going to make it. And I wound up being able to get out of a work commitment I had. So I came up to L.A. and I went to it. And again, Danny had the great idea. He talked to some people at CDPR and they decided to all the entire CDPR away team awaited me to come out. And they all were clapping and cheering when I came out. And then that went viral too. And yeah. Like since then, yeah, it's just weird. I mean, clearly I love the game and I'm super excited about the game and I'm not afraid to share that enthusiasm on social media, as I'm sure you've seen. But it's just been real cool, man. I mean, you know, I'm very excited for the game. I obviously want to cover the game. I want to do a lot of different stuff. But, you know, I think, you know, like you were just mentioning before, I'm glad that my excitement has been infectious on other people. And at first I was kind of shy about it, like, maybe it's too much. Maybe I shouldn't do it. And I'm like, screw it. Who cares? Just have fun with it. You know what I mean? And that's just the way I look at it. So, yeah, when any big new cyberpunk news comes out, I'm going to talk about it. Why not? You know, it's fun. Have fun with it. I mean, celebrate the game and stop worrying about, you know, being shy or worrying about what other people think. Just worry about what you think. If you want to be excited about something, be excited about it. That's my philosophy.
Yeah, so Gamertag Radio has been around for a long time. Like you mentioned, Danny's in the Podcast Hall of Fame. And it seems like it was a while ago, but it was only in February. You guys just hit 1K episodes, right?
Yep, it was in episode 1000. That was in February. And it coincided with the 15-year anniversary. So it was perfect timing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they had Phil Spencer on, so that's definitely of Xbox. So that was definitely a really cool interview. You should go check that out, especially if you're interested in the, you know, a little bit more next gen news. Even listening to it now, you're still going to get information that maybe you didn't know from it. Even though that Xbox has been slowly bringing out some more info over time, we're going to cover their event here quickly. And then briefly, I just want to say, because I know we only have Paris for a little bit of time today. The biggest thing that for Paris and I, my relationship with Paris, we had known each other in passing and we met each other, but I think it was the Destiny 2 review event when we pretty much got locked in a hotel for 2.5 days.
Yep, that was it. It was Destiny 2, yep.
Yeah, we were next to each other and we were just grouping up, and that was, you know, because, and we played some, but that's when, you know, we got to spend a lot of time together and we had a lot of fun. So that's a little bit where our friendship, we've always had a relationship, but I think where some of our friendship kicked off and seeing them, and hopefully we get, we get to see you again at some form of an event sometime in the next, I don't know, 2 years.
Yeah,
at this
let's
point.
Hope so.
But all right, we're going to jump right into it. So we have an Xbox event, kind of next-gen event to talk about. Michael?
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin with this, just because, Xbox, Microsoft, they announced that they're going to do a series of events, and the first event was a third-party, quote-unquote, gameplay event, which I think that would be the first thing we jump into, because it seems like a lot of people came out of this, where they showed 13 different games on their various platforms, Xbox One, and then Xbox Series X and PC, and they promised gameplay, and we didn't really see a ton of gameplay. So I kind of just want to start with that. How did you guys feel coming out of this gameplay reveal? Do you think people are blowing it out of proportion that there wasn't a lot of gameplay? And then we'll get more into what was actually shown.
Paris?
I would say the event was fine for what it was. The issue was the overhype that happened, you know, the week prior. Obviously, you know, Boss Logic did the Assassin's Creed Valhalla initial reveal, and then immediately Ubisoft got on Twitter, you know, saying that they were going to come to the May 7th event. And then if you look at some of the Xbox tweets that went out, it basically gave you the illusion that this was almost a quote unquote gameplay reveal for Series X games, you know, even though it wasn't going to be first party. You know, speculation went wild. I mean, of course, you know what I mean. You thought, oh, is it going to be Cyberpunk? Are they showing Cyberpunk? Oh, my God. And then it was like, no, it's not that. And then we realized, OK, it's not going to be some big third party games. But OK, we're still going to see actual gameplay from some of these games. And it was a letdown in that sense because we had too big of an expectation. And I really put a lot of blame on Ubisoft when it comes to that, because, you know, I only knew the day before, because I saw the creative directors Twitter, where he responded to someone on Twitter and he said, no, it's not gameplay. It's just in-engine stuff. And it's like, okay, so it's not a demo. Then what is this? But I think like Aaron Greenberg even came out and said, if they just would have said nothing and just treated this like it was in another Inside Xbox, I think people would be perfectly fine with the event and there wouldn't be a lot of the complaining that you've seen over the past few days. I just look, and my dog agrees, people are just excited, right? Because we're all cooped up at home. You know, we know E3 is canceled. So this looked like the kickoff to what was going to be the replacement for E3. So we all got excited to, wow, my dog is barking. I'm sorry.
No, it's not picking up. You're good.
Okay. But, people are just excited for the Series X reveal of games. And they were let down because they just got, for all intents and purposes, sizzle reel trailers. That's the way I looked at it.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a half an hour, which was like, it was only like 27 minutes or whatever, which was fine. The biggest thing that I took away from it, because like I wasn't expecting, I just wanted to see certain things, I guess. And I wasn't like, they were trying to, they announced the event and they were trying to like even temper expectations going up to the event. Not good enough. But the thing that really kind of bugged me a little bit, and I feel like this means that Sony has some of these marketing deals already taken care of, is it just felt like a AA event. Like there were some of those studios I heard of, and we're going to go through the list really quickly, but there was not, I don't feel that there was any, other than Assassin's Creed, which we already knew was going to be there, there was no, you know, heavy hitter there.
No, completely agree with you. And I do think that was the whole point, that it was a AA event. This was, the way we talked about it right after the event was, these were games that if this was a normal E3, they would have been buried in a sizzle reel trailer during the Xbox media briefing, right? You would have completely forgotten about them by the time you actually had a chance to play them, right? So in that sense, I think the event worked because it put a spotlight on some of these AA games that you may not have paid attention to otherwise. Again, I think it's more to they overhyped it. And if they would have just let the event speak for itself, it would have been fine.
Well, Microsoft in particular, like, they were put in a position where it's kind of hard for them to like preface this event with like, hey, this is AA games, because that's kind of, it's got like a negative connotation to it, but it's totally what it was. They couldn't say indies. These games are all like in between indie and AAA. So they were in a position where they couldn't really say like beforehand, hey, this is AA stuff, don't get too excited. They had to just say like, hey, gameplay, new systems, go. They didn't help themselves though, because like throughout the event, it constantly said at the bottom, gameplay for Assassin's Creed Valhalla coming up, gameplay for Assassin's Creed Valhalla coming up. That probably didn't help, because I think that was the only game that I felt like people were disappointed with not seeing actual gameplay. All the other stuff is like fine, like Dirt 5, cars racing, we all know that's going to look pretty. That's just how, that's how racing games are on hardware. But they hyped that one up, and Ubisoft hyped it up as well, so they kind of just put themselves in a position where they hyped one specific game, and that one specific game, the only true AAA game in their conference, or whatever you want to call it, direct, Inside Xbox, it just led to like an outrage. And of course, it's the internet in 2020, so everyone's going to freak out, get overhyped. Yeah.
All right, so just real quick, Michael, do you want to go through what we saw?
Yeah, so the games that we saw, I actually put up a little list for us to go off of. The first one, obviously, Assassin's Creed Valhalla. That's going to be Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and all the other platforms. We have Bright Memory Infinite, which is Xbox One and Xbox One X. There's a couple games on here that are just Xbox One X, which means their release date will probably be past that, 18-month window of games on Xbox One and Xbox Series X. Bright Memory Infinite, that one in particular, is the game that apparently was just developed by one person, which, you know, was pretty impressive. I don't know the size and scope of that game. I know it's on PC, so...
No, those are two different games.
This is like an upgrade, technically, right? Yeah,
because like Bright Memory is different than Bright Memory Infinite.
Yeah. And then you have a game, Call of the Sea. This one will be coming to Game Pass. You had Chorus, which is coming to everything, even Stadia. Dirt 5 coming to everything. Madden NFL, they featured Madden, which was I guess, nice to see that, though Madden came out of it a little weird because EA in the press conference said they aren't doing smart delivery. They're doing their own thing for that, which is the most EA thing in the world to do. Then you have Scarlet Nexus from Bandai Namco, which is, again, coming to everything. Scorn, which is only coming to Xbox Series X. Scorn was that really, like, nasty-looking, like, horror game.
Second, I had no idea what was going on.
Second Extinction, which is, like, a three-person co-op shooter. When I was looking it up online, there was a lot of Destiny comparisons, which I don't know how true that is. You guys are the Destiny experts.
I didn't get that vibe from it at all.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, when I was like going through
trying
the
to go for that crowd, they didn't do a good job of presenting it.
Yeah. Then you have The Ascent, The Medium, Vampire Bloodlines, and then Yakuza Like a Dragon. 9 of the games in the 13 are going to be optimized for Xbox. The ones that aren't optimized for Xbox, Xbox Series X, are just the ones that are just made from the ground up for Xbox Series X.
So the biggest thing that I took away from that is, one, a lot of people actually were freaking out about the Yakuza games, which I still don't understand, but that's a personal thing. I respect what those games are, but they just lose me at a certain point in time, which is fine. But the biggest takeaway I took from the event was Games Pass advertisement again, which we know Games Pass is kicking ass with over 10 million people on it, 10 million subscribers, and then smart delivery. Those two words were all over this event.
Yeah.
And then the EA thing, it was almost just like they always have some type of marketing. Lately, they've had some type of marketing deal with Xbox, so it kind of felt like it just kind of had to be there, even though they – again, I think that the point, you know, like even like Paris made it earlier, like everybody's fiending for any kind of information. And if you could – if somebody could have shined during this event, it could have been EA talking about a new game mode or something like that, anything for people to take out of it. And it was just Patrick Mahomes saying, Madden exists. like we knew that. So, but the smart delivery thing, and then I was kind of surprised that EA is not doing the same thing for the most part, but they kind of are, because if you're buying a next gen system, you're more than likely you're going to get it at or slightly around launch, whenever that is. And then if you're not getting it at launch, you'll get it later, and then you'll just buy the like Madden 22 at that point.
Yeah,
how do you feel, Paris?
I don't like EA's approach to this. And again, who knows what NFL licensing may have to do with this, contracts, whatever. But instead of them just fully embracing smart delivery, they're hedging it. Because what is it? You have to buy Madden by December 31st, and then you have to redeem it by March 31st, 2021 to, quote unquote, get the upgrade. And the way I look at it as this is, let's say I don't get Madden until the first week of January. I am now on Xbox One. I am now ineligible to then play the Series X version if I just so happen to buy the Series X, let's say in April of that year. Now right. It can't upgrade. I'm stuck with, I guess, backwards compatible playing the lesser version of Madden. Why? What's the incentive there other than
I guess I didn't really think about it that way.
Yeah,
I didn't think about that, because I figured a lot of this smart delivery stuff was going to be would be you put your Xbox One X disc in your S and it just works better. You know, and that still might happen, but now it sounds like you might not have the better version. Like, you might have to just play the up-res version, maybe. Like, I don't...
Yeah, I guess the way to look at it, again, pretend, because we don't know this. Let's just say Assassin's Creed Valhalla, the Series X version, runs at native 4K with ray tracing enabled and all this for the Series X, but it didn't have smart delivery. You wouldn't get that because time expired, so you can't get it now. That's basically what Madden is saying. But who knows what the Madden enhanced version is? I mean, we obviously are still in very early days with all this, and we don't know how it's going to work. But I do like smart delivery for what it means. It means buy the game once. You're not penalized for picking it up on the current generation if you decide to upgrade to the next generation hardware later on. I mean, what Cyberpunk has said they're doing it, Assassin's Creed is doing it, and I just think it's going to wind up being the standard. It's what people are going to expect. Yeah. And I mean, obviously PlayStation hasn't said anything yet, so we don't know what they're going to do, but I bet you one thing they will do, whether they call it DualShock, you know, sense delivery or whatever, it's going to they're going to have the equivalent. They have to. There's no way they can't. They can't go into the next generation and have me buy Cyberpunk on PlayStation 4 and then tell me, well, you got to give me $10 or $20 to get the enhanced version on PlayStation 5. That no one would go for that.
That's why, like, I mean, they'll probably just dust off Crossbuy, like, from their, like, book of tricks and then just use Crossbuy as their thing. But, yeah, I think it would be almost insane for Sony at this point to not have some sort of smart delivery equivalent, especially with them being quiet. Like, they need to take advantage of Microsoft being so open, so then when they finally do their official reveal, they can just hit all the bullet points that have question marks on them and then just get onto the good stuff, which would be the video games.
Yep.
Yeah, especially with two heavy hitters coming this summer with Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us. Those, I would be very curious to see how well they take advantage of PS5. Because you have to, like, you have to figure with the delays and stuff like that. They've started tinkering with how they run on PS5. I would assume, like, Spider-Man will run better. There'll be, like, a PS5 version of it, even if it comes out with the eventual sequel. You know, like, pre-order and get, you know, the original. Like, at that point in time, it's going to be, you know, it's already, like, $20 now or something like that. So, but, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, again, I think everybody was hoping to see a little bit more. And I think it's kind of more like just like a teaser, and like Michael, like you and I've talked about before, I just think that these companies are missing massive opportunities to control the internet for a day or 2 days by showing anything, versus everybody waiting until, like, we're going to talk about it here in a second, like, everybody's still waiting until the summer event that Keeley's running, or like, well, we're going to just wait until June. I'm like, there's a whole nother month. Like, you don't have to get buried. And I just feel like they're just missing this chance. So, but, and then here, news today, I think, is part of the reason why the Valhalla stuff was maybe a little bit tempered for the Xbox event. So, what you got there, Mike?
Yeah, so Ubisoft they nailed down their date for their Ubisoft press conference, and that is going to be July 12th. I don't necessarily think this is part of the Summer Games Fest thing that Keighley's doing, but it's Ubisoft marking their territory of, this is when we are going to control the internet for the day. Which I think we're going to see more and more companies just either, if they're with Summer Game Fest or not, start to mark their territory, and we'll get instead of our week at E3, we're going to have the summer of video games, which is something I'm looking forward to. It took me a while to wrestle with the idea of no E3, but the idea of having events every other week sounds really damn cool, even if I'm going to be home doing it, but at least I won't need to have a bunch of hand sanitizer on me. So,
right.
So what's your first feeling when you saw this press conference E3 thing? Because they essentially came out and said, this is our E3.
Yeah.
Paris, what were you feeling when you saw it today?
You're talking to me.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not surprised. I guess I was a little surprised it was in July, but I mean, we also know that Xbox is doing their thing in July. I guess my first thought was, could Xbox and Ubisoft potentially both do this on the same day? And it would be almost replicating that E3 press briefing experience, you know, where you go, like, Monday is just press briefing day, where you have, like, a whole bunch of press briefings all on the same day. And obviously, you know, Xbox had started doing theirs on Sunday, and I think Bethesda was doing theirs on Sundays now too. But it makes sense that this Ubisoft one is on a Sunday, because people are going to be home. I mean, even though we're quasi-quarantined at this point, there's still people that are working. Even during the week, your kids are running around trying to chase your kids and keep them entertained. Maybe we don't necessarily have the time, you know, on a random Wednesday or Thursday to sit down for an hour and a half to watch a video game press conference. So I'm sure they want as many eyeballs as possible on this. So I'm with you guys. I like this format better, and I would dare speculate, like you said, you were disappointed that E3 is going away. I'm disappointed E3 went away just for hanging out with people, not so much the actual event itself. I think it's lost its relevance over the past few years. I've thought that for a while. I have a sneaking feeling what Jeff Keighley is doing, and with these digital events, because they're going to be a huge success. I know the ESA said E3 is coming back next year, and it very well may come back. I'm not saying it won't, But I still see Jeff Keighley doing this again next year. And I think he's already alluded to the fact that he plans to do it again next year anyway. So I think these digital events will be more effective because 90% of the audience, this is how they consume the content anyways. I mean, E3 is really more for people like us and obviously the media that can go to LA to attend it. But it costs a whole boatload of money for these companies to set up in the LA Convention Center and put on these booths and all these events. I think they're going to see the cost savings from this and see that it's just as effective as if they went to E3 and go, well, why are we doing this? And just
I mean, Ubisoft rents an entire theater.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, because you have to look at it this way. And I know I'm tangent off in the E3 thing, but PlayStation has now been gone, was going to be gone for 2 years anyways, right? Microsoft, even though they're, and I'm doing air quotes there, they're really not there. They're across the street. And this was the third or fourth year they'd been doing that. I mean, if Ubisoft and Bethesda looks at this and goes, wait, why are we in the convention center again? And they stop doing it. What's the point? Is kind of my thing.
Especially with the approach. You've gotten a couple more things than I have for different companies, but the approach that Ubisoft has always taken to their events, where they bring you to them in small groups of 12 and 18 people to play the game in an environment that they can control, even if it's for, you know, 2 hours or four or six or eight, depending on what they're showing you. And they control the time, they give us the embargoes, and, you know, versus, okay, here's our game on the show floor, and go wait in line and have at it. I think that in terms, you'll see a little bit more of that. I still would be curious if a company is ever going to let us do a hands-on preview via the internet, like send a build somehow, like of a game. And I think that that's hard because of like what we just saw from like Last of Us 2, you know, like coming things like that coming out. I think that, you know, it would have to be like a super controlled environment somehow, you know, but and I've mentioned it before. I don't think anything's ever going to replace a hands on impressions of hearing what, you know, like as an example, what Paris thinks of, you know, the next Division update and what I think of the next Division update and whoever else you pay attention to in that world of games, of seeing what they feel like and what they don't feel like before it comes out. But in terms of trailers and press conferences, like absolutely, like just go to Twitch and YouTube. Like you don't need to bring in, you know, crowd noise that most of the consumers think is fake anyways.
Agreed. And I guess my argument back to what you're saying, again, we're talking, knock on wood, a post-COVID world where we can all freely move around and go to these things again. The E3 demos, I would think it would make more sense to not have these anymore, too, because if you really think about it, when we get to the end of the fall, when we get to the quote unquote holiday gaming season, they typically have these preview events that we're flying out to go to anyways to get hands on with what is basically a near final version of the game. So you're getting more of a real representation of what the game actually is. I don't necessarily need to play, and I'm just random game. I don't need to play a stage demo of Halo Infinite in June. And it's not a real representation of the final game. And then I have to go to a review event and play it again anyways to get that real representation of the final game, you know, in September or, you know, or August or something. So I really do think this summer of gaming thing where they can stage out all these events and we're not, these companies aren't competing for your eyeballs in a condensed 2 to 3 day window that is E3 versus they can space it out over the month of May, June, July, even into August, because Gamescom is still going to be a thing, right? And you kind of culminate it with Gamescom, and then that's the summer preview event. So we know all the new games that are coming for the holiday, and then August, September, you know, into October, we start going to these review events, and you cover the game that way. I think that makes more sense. It's still as effective for the people sitting at home, because what you think about, again, Halo in June really doesn't matter to Joe Video Gamer. He just wants to see the cool trailer and Phil Spencer to announce it. He's really only going to care what you think when you're saying, yep, I'm actually playing the final game and here's what I think about it. If what I'm saying makes sense.
Yeah, well, as long as that trailer has actual gameplay.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing. but that's kind of the thing with E3. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's kind of the thing with E3. Yeah. So much of it is freaking fake. So much of it where there's these stage demos and there's these scenes we see in a game that never make it to the final product. They just try to make it look as cool as possible for that E3 audience. I mean, the one that clearly stands out in my head right now is Anthem. None of that happened in the game. The BioWare devs themselves was like, wait, we're making that? I didn't even realize that. You know, there's too much of that going on. So I don't know. I'm being all preachy about E3, but again, back to the original point, I can totally see it going away, and what Keeley's doing, what IGN's doing, replaces it. And I don't think anything changes. I think we'll all be fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting because, again, like I was even going to mention, and, you know, Paris understands this and Michael understands this, like, especially when you're covering E3 and you're trying to, you know, produce as much content as possible, you're essentially doing daily recordings or, mm-hmm. you know, in Gamertag's case, multiple daily recordings. And by the time, like, if you, like, I'll bump into Paris on a Tuesday afternoon of E3 and I'll be like, hey, what did you think of that Ubisoft press conference? And he goes, I don't remember it.
Yeah,
because you've been to four other press conferences and six appointments since then.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I'd made the point where we were talking on the podcast the other day. I made the point that, like, those, and I kind of alluded to this before, those games that we saw on May 7th, if this would have been a normal E3, from last E3, I only remember two things from the Xbox media event: Keanu Reeves and them showing Halo at the end. That's it. I don't remember anything else that they showed there. You know, unless I go back and watch it, like, oh, wait, that was there, because it's so condensed into a window and you're going 1,000 miles per hour. You're sitting in the Xbox media briefing and you're already thinking, all right, when I get out of here, I got to go to the showcase and I got to go to Bethesda. I got to go do this. And then tomorrow I got to go. Da-da-da-da-da. So you're constantly on the go and you're just regurgitating stuff that you saw 5 minutes before. And then you immediately forget it because you're on to the next thing. So, again, I like this approach where it's spaced out. It gives us more time and freedom to be more intelligent with our thoughts and our coverage of it. So we can have more well thought out, you know, feelings about these games versus just the rush that is E3.
Yeah, I appreciate them kind of taking this, like, gentleman's agreement that they have of just like, hey, this is our time. This is our day. This is our week, as opposed to having three press conferences in one day. What is going to be interesting, I'm going to steal some of Dave's thunder that he mentioned in the past, but it was a great thing that he mentioned. The only ones that could truly be affected by this are, like, the indie devs that show at the E3, because a lot of those indie games need some hands-on impressions to explain it. They need someone to actually, like, thoroughly talk them out, that a little, like, trailer montage that we used to get at Sony and Microsoft's press conference doesn't do justice. And E3 was good for developers to get their, or not developers, for media and influencers to get their hands on some of these indie titles and explain what the hell they are. And which is why I'm glad, I'll just jump to the next story. A bunch of indie developers have made something called the Guerrilla Collective, and they have marked their day in the calendar. They partnered with Kinda Funny Games, and they're going to have Greg Miller host a showcase from June 6th to 8th, where they're just going to show a bunch of indie games. They put out the full list of developers. It's a lot, and I saw a call to arms that they're still looking for people to add to this 3-day indie showcase. So the indie developers are all getting together, and publishers, and marking their calendar. And I think it's going to be interesting to see what the indie developers see from this, because as much as they need people to play the game to explain what their game is, that stuff gets lost in the shuffle of E3, regardless of, like, yeah, they'll get eyes on them because, you know, you go to IGN and you'll want to get that Halo story or that Last of Us story, and you might read the indie hands-on impressions. But that comes and goes so quick in that week that everyone's looking at the news. So having the indie developers, like, have their part in the calendar, and just to see what the results are going to be from them, because I'm sure they're going to analyze this numbers, and if the ESA comes in and is like, hey, we want to do E3, the indie devs might be like, you know what? That thing we did last year was way better than what we saw previously.
And yeah, especially if a developer can send a build to Greg Miller's house, which is where he's recording from, let him play it while he's interviewing the guy that's explaining what's going on. So you're hearing the conversation, the ability that Greg Miller has to host an entire conversation one-on-one or in a panel setting, and him actually playing a game and you watching that happen. That is unsurmountably great coverage for an indie, just to be on his platform and his personality and his gameplay. Like for companies like you mentioned about the indies being buried, like I worry about a publisher like Devolver. Like you literally have to most of Devolver's games, you have to play them to understand that they're fun. And I also think that you might be able to gain some of that traction by replacing this is with it taking over three, but it being on the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th. I'm hoping that they will be playing the game and not just like showing, you know, somebody, you know, showing a preview or a pre-played build.
No, it makes sense.
Harris, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, no, go on.
Oh, no. I was just agreeing, saying it makes sense. And that's kind of the point that I was trying to make. I think it'd be more effective to do like this kind of funny event with someone like a Greg Miller and literally, like you said, give the indies like their own time slot, so to speak, to shine. And then you let some people get some actual hands on with some of these indie games. You're showing it over Twitch or Mixer or whatever, and you can get kind of that real time impression of, hey, I like this game, or here's you know, here might be an issue that this developer could work on or whatever. You can almost kind of real time talk through it as you're playing it and give a viewer a true, honest impression of the game versus just showing it on a sizzle reel somewhere and it just gets lost in a shuffle.
I believe there's actually an indie thing going on right now on Steam this week. I forget exactly what it's called. It's like the Luda something convention. And it's a bunch of indie developers who are just putting, like, basically the demos we probably would have seen at E3 this year. They're just putting small demos of their games on Steam. And I believe Jeff Keighley even said there will be demos releasing along with the Summer Games Fest. And yes, that will do way more than, you know, Paris, Dave, or me playing a game for 10 minutes at E3 and then talking about it on a podcast for, you know, however much time we give that particular indie game. So in order for all this to be successful, they're going to need to definitely like take advantage of the spotlight, show as much as they can. And if they're able to produce a demo, even though how dangerous and like, or not dangerous, how much time consuming that can be for some of these smaller teams, but if they can partner up with the Summer Games Fest or the other little convention things that are popping up online and release demos for their games, ESA might end up, you know, like whenever they start working on the next one, calling people up in December and having developers and publishers just say it's not worth it, depending on how well they hit this. And that's going to be interesting to see what E3 is going to end up looking like after we've had a whole summer. If this goes successful, which I have a feeling this is going to go successful, we're all pretty hungry for content right now. So, I mean, and PlayStation shut Twitter down basically when they released pictures of the controller. Like, this is going to go well. And, you know, TGS was officially canceled, so they're going to have a digital event. Gamescom is officially canceled. They're going to have a digital event. And as much as, like, Gamescom or TGS need to or would like to have a physical space, they're probably going to do fantastic numbers.
I agree.
But that's kind of all I had for news, Dave.
All right, cool. So we like to do a little bit of playing and watching, obviously, like, you know, Paris, we just be curious. Because I think that I'm pretty sure all three of us have watched the same thing, so we'll talk about that briefly, and I know we only have you for a little bit of time here, but what have you been most recently playing?
Oh, myself? The Witcher 3. That's what been playing. Yeah, I've been playing a lot of The Witcher 3.
Well, you've been messing with your new toy, though, right? And that's why you're playing The Witcher 3 again. Your new tank, your beefy PC.
Oh, I was playing it even before that. But yeah, I just recently, like before COVID and all that went down, AMD, you know, graciously sponsored my new build, and I have a 3950X CPU now. And it's a tank. It's definitely a tank. I mean, you know, I got it.
I saw the case.
Yeah.
I saw the case on your table, and I'm like, okay, like I know how tall Paris is. And I saw this case next to him, and I'm like, oh, that's That thing's going to flip his desk over.
Yeah, Fractal Design. I did a review for their Define 7 XL case. Yeah, this thing is huge. Like, it's so big. I don't know if you've seen a picture online or whatever. I actually have one of my Robotech models sitting inside the case because I have that much space in there. But no, the PC is great. I mainly got it for 4K editing, which it just eats that up now with the, problem. And obviously, in Cyberpunk and all these big PC games coming out at the end of the year, I'm not gonna have a problem being able to play games on that. But yeah, I've been playing a lot of Witcher 3. Ironically,
how many times
enough,
is that for you?
Well, I'm not really doing a playthrough now, so I've done 4 complete, like start to finish, Hearts of Stone, Blood and Wine, everything complete. This one, I'm just messing around in old saves. Like I pulled a save that's pretty close to the end of the original campaign, and I'm just going around Skellig and I'm just taking pictures. That's all I'm really doing. And I'm just making a couple different decisions that I made on a few quests and some things that I might've missed, but that's about it. But it's insane that game's been out for 5 years and I still find new stuff.
It's funny. So my girlfriend, I played it when it first came out. I had to review it. And I think I started it like halfway up a couple years ago. And then my girlfriend wanted to play it just because she was just looking for something to play, quarantine, you need a big game. And I was amazed at watching her play through because I basically just watched her play the whole thing. Like I had the Switch playing like a puzzle game like Tetris 99. And I was just looking up watching. And there was so much stuff that even though I played it like 1.5 times, I missed. And it consistently blew my mind how gigantic that game was, looking back at it and just being like, man, I don't remember this quest at all, or I don't think I found that stranger, or I never went to that question mark. And it's just insane. Like, I've been almost tempted to pick it up on the Switch, but I don't know if I want to do that to myself because I have it on PC, I have it on PS4, but I don't know if I'm like willing to try and play that on the Switch.
It supports cross save from PC to Switch, though,
yeah,
right?
That's what I was just going to bring up. Okay. Is if you have your GOG save, you're able to. I don't know if you can do Steam as well, but I know you can do GOG. But you can, you can pull your PC save over to the Switch and vice versa. So that's one thing I've been able to do since last year is, for some quick little, play on the Switch, pull it up, run through, save it, go back to your PC and pick up right where you left off. It's pretty awesome.
All right. Real quick, because I got to ask, because I want to know myself, and I don't really think I've heard you say it. What's your feelings right now on the state of Division 2 and Destiny 2?
Oh, man, you're making me go on record and say this stuff. Well, I'll start with the Division because Destiny is a lot longer.
We can always do a separate episode. Yeah.
No, you guys can go off if you guys want to. Like.
unfortunately, it really comes down to this with the Division. I was late to the party on the first one. And then when I did finally invest in it, I really loved that world and just all the modes and everything that they had done. I think it was the 1.8 update or whatever from the first one that really got me sucked in. And then, the Division 2, I remember, again, when we talked these E3 sizzle demo fakery things, I remember playing the demo at E3. Obviously, Julian Garrity, creative director, he's such an awesome guy. I mean, everyone over there, hell, I almost worked for freaking Massive. So, I mean, I love all those people over there, but the game in the state that it's in right now, it's fun to play for a little bit, but I quickly run out of things to do. I'm still not happy with the loot grind that's in there. The new global events that they brought in, I'm not really a fan of them compared to the old one. I love the world of DC. I love, bringing back part of New York, stuff like that. I don't get that investment that I even had with the first game. I I can't connect with it the way that I hoped I would. So I don't know, man. Like, I've just cold turkey stopped playing it. I'm not playing it at all. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I just don't have the interest in it to go in that world and chase things the way that I thought I would. Now, when you bring up Destiny, it gets way more complicated because obviously, I've been playing that game since day one. I mean, it's, I talk about Cyberpunk. I probably talk about Destiny. If you combine it, I probably like Destiny way more because it's just how much I've loved that game, over the years. But it's also a game I stopped playing. I stopped playing after Shadowkeep when the first season came with Saint 14. I just wasn't interested. Even the stuff right now, I'm just not interested. There's not, the grind's not there for me to want to go chase the current, the way the weapons, the armor 2.0 and the mods aren't hitting the way that I thought. Trials is a hot mess with all the cheating on PC, so I just flat out refuse.
When it's the best place to play is on Stadia,
yeah,
because you can't get DDoSed or get like hacked.
Yeah,
like your game has a huge problem.
Exactly, 100%, 100% agree. You definitely have a problem when it comes to that. So I'm just kind of in a, all right, I'm gonna wait and see what the hell comes with the expansion this fall. Now, obviously, the TWAB that just came out. There's definitely some hope there. They're obviously realizing they're seeing what we're seeing. I mean, when you got people like GLAAD that are like, you know what, I'm good, I'm gonna go play something else for a while, you know you have a problem, right? So that's kind of how I look at it. They understand that their community isn't happy with the game. I'm pretty sure they're not happy with the current state of the game. I know they have some anti-cheat stuff in that they don't want to disclose too much, but dude, they got to figure out the cheating and trials. I mean, they brought back,
they gotta, like, it's gonna have to happen. I don't want to cut you off, I'm sorry, but no, it's gonna have to happen where there's, and I hate it like this, but there's a, you know, like somebody has to be watching, like a huge flaw of this game of whatever it is, if it's Gigs, if it's GLAAD, whoever it is. And if they run into a cheater, like they have to show it on stream, like Bungie literally going in and ripping this person out of the game.
Yeah, like, something.
It has to happen. Because you hear about somebody getting banned like 2 days later. Like, that doesn't do you any good. When you're ripping away people's flawless games or these people that make, quote unquote, a living on Twitch helping people run trials, and they are like, well, I can't promise you this because I don't know what I'm going to run into in, you know, cards, four, wins 4, 5, 6, and 7 of something that's out of my control. As soon as you take the control away from the player and their skill, especially in something like Trials of Osiris or endgame PvP, where skill is the most important aspect of it, and you can't promise that you can provide them a protective environment for that, they're done.
Yeah, and that's where we are right now. Like, I don't know if you know MTash, but like MTash, to mm-hmm. go on his stream and just see the frustration that he has with it, it's like, that's very telling. It's very telling when your most loyal leaders of the community, so to speak, right, content creators, whatever you want to call them, are just visibly upset all the time. They're tweeting their frustrations, they're talking about it on stream, they're talking about it on their YouTube videos, stuff like that. It's a problem. And that, like I said, I saw what Luke said in the TWAB, and you know, like transmog is coming, and they're obviously going to kind of get the reward system back to where it should have been in the first freaking place.
Blowing up Eververse.
Yeah, you know, yeah, changing Eververse, all that kind of stuff, bringing in the, giving us cosmetic items to chase in the game. Like, you remember, like, I don't know if you remember, like, Wrath and Machine or whatever. Dude, I ran that raid.
The ship.
A million, yeah, for the ship and the ghost ship, and all that yeah. stuff. It's like, bring that stuff back. Put specific yeah. strike rewards in there that we can go chase and grind for, dungeons, all that stuff. So the game's not dead. Clearly, the numbers show the game's not dead, but it's not in a place to where it should be. Like, I remember before Shadowkeep came out, and I got to interview Deej and all those guys at Gamescom, and I was so excited for it to come. My dog's barking again. Sorry.
You're good.
I was so excited for him. Like, oh, they're doing Armor 2.0, and we're going to get these changes. And Shadowkeep was okay, but it just didn't carry over. Like, the whole FOMO thing, in theory, sounded good, but then we quickly realized, okay, so if I don't play, why am I banging my head against the wall during the season, and then all this is just going to go away? What? You know, it's like, no, I'm not just going to keep playing the game just because something's going to go away. You need to give me incentives of things to chase and to want to grind for. And the game used to have that, and now it doesn't. And look, it's very clear the break from Activision, they don't have the development muscle power that they had before. So they're cutting corners where they can. I get it. But dude, we're going into year 6, right? Am I right on that? Year 6, something crazy like that.
The franchise, yeah.
Yeah, because it's all just Destiny to me. Destiny 1, yeah, 2,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that's fine.
But I mean, for someone like me that's been there from day one, I know the script. I was just saying this on who did I tweet? Kakis. I was tweeting at him saying this. You know, we know this dance. We've been doing this dance since 2014. And I feel like
they're gonna get low in April and hype us up in May with some cool stuff, and then do something really cool in July to get people back playing again.
It goes beyond that, though. The real dance is this. Yeah, they do the whole hype game, but we get super excited when the expansion comes out. And then by the turn of the going into the next year, something fundamentally breaks and pisses the community off brings us literally to the brink, right? You think there's going to be all out mutiny. Then we're listening, you know, here's the roadmap, here's the changes. We go, oh my God, there's hope again. And then we do all that, get to the expansion, rinse and repeat, and just do it all over again. That's we've been on this rotation since after Taken King. I feel like Taken King was the only year where they just got it right. and I agree with you,
but that fascinates me too, because I feel like that is when the content was the driest, was like January after the Taken King. There was nothing to do,
but you were still in there grinding, though. Felt like there was something in there to chase. See, that's one thing, because like I remember House of Wolves, like with Skolas and all that. I'm like, dude, I was all in. I was still playing Prison of Elders, all that stuff. So it's, I don't have that feel right now during this time of the year. I typically always take a break from Destiny around the beginning of a new year, because that's usually the slowest time. But by this point, oh, dude, I'm back in. I'm playing. I'm actively playing and having fun. And I just don't feel it right now. I do think when this expands, because I think the darkness is coming in and they're going to obviously do these other changes. I'm sure I know I'm going to be playing again. I'm not even concerned about that. But to me personally, this has been the lowest point Destiny has ever been in for me. I'm not saying overall for everyone, but for me, this is the lowest point, because I simply do not have a desire to go play right now. And that's unfortunate. I still follow it, obviously. I read the TWAB every week. I see what's going on, but I've not seen anything that makes me go, you know what? I need to go pick up the sticks and I need to jump in. I'm just not feeling it.
They need another 0 hour whisper mission. Something. Like, I mean, they need something like that. And I just don't know if they have it in them right now, especially with COVID. So, and then real quick again, trying to respect your time, but I know that we'll briefly talk about watching, and I'm assuming that you watch this, cause I think I know you well enough, but where are you at with Last Dance? Are you up to date?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Completely up to date. Why? Well, it's Sunday. It's must watch TV.
We all caught up to the normal person, Michael over here, that got up to episode 8 like 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. I've been watching with the property of ESPN's watermark in the center when all the episodes leaked, or the first 8 episodes leaked.
It's funny you say that, because I had an opportunity to just watch it all early, and I told said person, I don't want to do that. I want to watch it every Sunday night with everyone else, because it's literally like an event. And honestly, part of the highlight for me is my son, who's 14 now, is him watching it with me, because I've been telling him the legend of Michael Jordan all this time. And for him to actually see it for himself, because he's a Golden State fan, so he loves Steph Curry and all that. I'm like, look, I'm gonna tell you, none of these cats can do what this guy was doing back in the 80s and 90s. And it's like now he gets to actually see it, and he's just constant questions. Question as we watch, and I love it. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's same. Like, I mean, my son's 20. My son will be 21 in November. And you know, just he was kind. You know, like he knew about it. He pays enough attention to basketball, and he's a history buff, including sports history. But him just seeing the stuff, and just the part that fascinated me the most about episode 7 and 8 was just the way that Jordan would sometimes have to even self-motivate himself to do that. Like the story of, I can't even remember the guy's name now, but the story of the Bullets player that went off on the beginning of a back-to-back. And then the guy's like supposedly like number 11 on the bench roster. And he, you know, drops like 40 points in a game. And he allegedly like put his arm around Michael Jordan and said, good game, Mike. And that was something that Jordan told himself to play better the next day, that, you know, we find out like 7 years later didn't even happen. Yeah. And his pure fascination with baseball, like I knew about it, you know, like I was a teenager when he retired, and like and I knew that, you know, like he always loved baseball. It wasn't something that was ever hidden if you paid attention to Jordan. But the part that I thought was most fascinating for me during those episodes was him saying, before the 92 Olympics, if I didn't have to play in these Olympics, and if he didn't have a tangible desire to distance himself from Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, he would have left him to play baseball then.
Yep.
like before the Olympics, he would have been like, I want to go play ball, like, in or go play baseball. And but he also, the competitiveness in him was, okay, I want to win a gold medal, and I want to I want to destroy everybody else in the world, and then I want to make sure that I get three in a row because nobody else has done it.
Yep. Dude is a legend, man. And it was LeBradford Smith. That was a guy you're thinking of.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Well, it's funny.
And then
though,
what he did to like BJ Armstrong.
Oh God. Yeah. That was great. So like I couldn't control myself when I found out they leaked us being from Chicago. It's just one of those things where it was a hit of nostalgia. So I just had to consume it right away. But yeah, no, it's just fascinating just watching their mentality to get themselves hyped up. It ended up putting me in like the wormhole where I was just on YouTube looking up like SB Nation videos of like the David Robinson Shaq feud, and it was the same thing where Shaq made up a story that as a kid David Robinson didn't give him an autograph and he used that to motivate himself, and just seeing how many athletes did that, especially back then, because back then you needed to have a hatred to compete against each other because everyone was just at a high aggressive ass level that it just cracks me up. Like the I basically call it like the Bleacher Report like fans of things. If you ever look at their Twitter account, they no one's watched basketball prior to 2010 who runs that Twitter account, and people talk about like how like Draymond Green is like super tough or Lance Stevenson is super tough, and then I just look at like the Pistons in the 80s and 90s, and I'm just like, they couldn't last a second against any of these guys on the Pistons. And just seeing how much the game has changed has just been like amazing for me. And even though I'm not like the biggest sports fan, like I know Dave, you're missing sports like every single day, or, you know, you turn on the radio and go to work. I'm not like that. I like have my favorite teams and I watch my favorite teams, and that's pretty much it. It's definitely made me want sports back watching this documentary to where like I fell down the wormhole. You know, I found people that are just putting like Michael Jordan's first game as a Wizard against the Bulls. I ended up watching that on YouTube in the background just because it's like, I kind of want basketball right now. The playoffs would be happening, you know, and like just watching.
Dude,
that
I'm watching, like, I'm watching Korean baseball simulcast by ESPN yeah. broadcasters in their house at 3 a.m.
like I'm starting to get that because I almost miss the sports talk that I would get at work, even though like half the time I would have to fake my way out of it when football came up, you know. So this came just at like the perfect time watching this, but now I'm just hunting down the last two episodes, but I'm gonna have to wait like everyone else, which makes me sad.
It's essentially my Sunday night football right now. It's like my must, like Paris said, it's like it's must see TV. And it's not even just the, you can watch the documentary, but he's doing probably the same thing I'm doing. As soon as like a commercial comes up, you're grabbing your phone to see what other people are tweeting about, because some of the NBA people, like the, like Mark Steins and David Aldridge of the world, they're tweeting stuff out in reference to what just aired, you know? And it's been fascinating. And then I found out like, they're going to do a Mark McGwire. They're releasing the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa documentary, like in the middle of June.
Ooh, that's going to be
like,
good.
I know like Paris is a bigger NBA guy than I am. I know that. I've seen him just like, you know, see some type of breaking news and he goes right on his Twitch or his YouTube and goes, you know, goes crazy with people for a little bit. And I'm that way with like with baseball, but,
you know, a little trivia on that. I saw Sammy Sosa hit 58 and pass McGwire in 98 because they were playing the Padres out here at Jack Murphy. So I got to see that game. I was at that game when he did it. And yeah, dude, that was just an amazing year at baseball. Just look, I don't care if they're on steroids or not. I mean, that home run race saved baseball. It did.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember my dad, we wouldn't have tickets to, you couldn't get Cubs tickets during that, but, and I'm a Sox fan, but I remember my dad we would drive out to Wrigley Field during games, hoping that one of them hit a ball outside of the park.
Yeah.
Because there'd just be a crowd because they were that damn strong that balls would fly out of the park every once in a while. And I remember a couple games just standing there with a bunch of other people. And then every time you heard the bat click and the crowd roar, people would get ready, hoping and praying that one of these balls would just fly out of the stadium. Yeah, so are there any other teams that you would want like this level of a documentary on? Like, that's what I've been curious about, which is why I fell into YouTube a lot, because I've just been like, okay, I want a Patriots one in like 5 years, and any teams that you would want in like any sport?
Well, I'm biased because I am a Lakers fan. I would love to see one on Shaq and Kobe. During that run, and just everything that led up to, you know, to the breakup and all that. Now, speaking of Kobe, I guess he was filming his last season, and I guess they're going to they're going to turn that into a documentary. So that's going to be interesting, which, not to get into in depth on it, but again, being a big Kobe fan and living out here, Lakers fan, my son was playing in the Mamba League with Gigi, their same age. So that was, and we had saw him 3 weeks before he died. It's just weird. That always will stick with me. But yeah, I would love to see those guys. God, I'm sure I can't even think off the top of my head. I know there's some baseball teams I would love to see. I would have to think about it more, but yeah, there's so many, there's so many different, players and teams out there just across the board that I think they could do something similar. I mean, Jordan obviously sticks out because he's arguably the greatest athlete ever, right? So to just see him and to see to go through this, I mean, he was doing things at that time that no one else was doing and still can't do. The one thing, and not to make this a sports talk show or whatever, but the one thing, like,
that's kind of what it's been the last couple of weeks with Last Dance, so you're good.
But the one thing that I explained to my son, and you can go pull up the stats and see it for yourself, Michael Jordan is the greatest mid-range shooter ever.
Oh, yeah. And they put some image up the other day. I don't know who it was, but it showed like 63 points, and it was like 25 or 30 games of him from like 63 to like 41 points, and he takes like two threes a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's so like even – that's like – I'm going way off track, but that's even like Larry Bird. Do you know Larry Bird in the 80s? He was only averaging like two threes a game. Right. And we consider him one of the greatest shooters ever. Right. That's why I always tell my son, because he was all Magic and Bird. Those guys couldn't play now. I go, are you kidding me? Are you put Bird now? He's Luka Doncic. That's who he is. Yeah. He would destroy this league right now. Yeah. The skill.
You blindfold Karl Malone and put him on the elbow. He's making the shot.
Yeah. So, I can talk to sports stuff all day.
All right, so I know you've got, you know, probably some other commitments tonight. You got time for like a question or two? Or?
Sure.
Okay. All right, so we asked for questions using hashtag AskDigitalDays. I'm looking through a couple of these. So
the middle
this one is one
would
that
be
I'd...
good for him.
Okay.
Yeah. Robbie Seifert, I've been a console gamer for over 30 years, thinking of building a gaming PC rather than buy a new console coming up. Pros and cons. Thanks.
You just built one, so.
Pros and cons.
And I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat right now, Paris. I don't know if you've heard me say this or not. The state of next-gen consoles, unless something changes in the next 30-ish to 45 days for me, I'm going to buy a better graphics card before I buy a next gen console right now.
Yeah, and I would say immediately building a PC, that's the first con, the price. You're going to spend more building a PC than you will a console, especially with what the Series X and the PlayStation 5 spec-wise is supposed to do. To try and replicate that yourself, you're spending at least about $1,500, right? So you have to think of it that way. But if the price tag isn't the issue, the pros to PC, building a PC, number one, you actually learn how to build something. So you can say that you did it with your hands, right? You get to actually go pick all the parts and the specs that you want to be in it. That's a plus. A PC has more uses than just playing games, depending on the specs and how you build it out. I don't care what the Series X is or the PlayStation 5 is. PC hardware will always be superior to console hardware, because sure, Series X and PlayStation 5 will kind of be on par with what PCs are doing for about, I don't know, first 6 months, 6 to 9 months or so. But by the time we get to 2021, they're going to clearly surpass. Like when those new NVIDIA GPUs and AMD GPUs drop, they're going to be vastly superior to the socks that are in the PlayStation 5 and the Series X. And that's this year, right? SSD speeds are going to continue to get faster on the PC. So all the fast load times and everything that you're seeing that they're touting on console, those are going to be on PC too. Like the motherboard I have an X570 Master from Gigabyte. It has PCIe 4.0 SSDs on it. I'm not currently using that, but if I decide to upgrade when it actually makes sense, I can, right? So the CPU I have in here is already superior. I got a 2080 Ti in this thing. It's already superior to what's going on. So if you, plus the ray tracing that's coming and all that. So if you want to have gaming at its absolute highest fidelity, it's going to be on PC. It's not going to be on console. But the plus to the console is a couple things. It's cheaper. Number one, like Series X and PlayStation 5 is probably going to be $500 or less. It's going to be able to do 4K, you know, knock on wood, 60 frames per second. God forbid all the AC Valhalla nonsense going on today. It's going to be more convenient because you can hook it up to your TV and sit on your couch and play without having to jump.
Plug and play.
Very plug and play. So, I mean, there's plus and minuses to both. Like, you're literally on this camera seeing where I game. This is where I game in this office. So to me, gaming on a PC is fine. I have an Xbox One X out in the living room. I use it more as a media center than I do anything else. I really don't play games on it, but that's my personal preference. So it really comes down to an individual. It really comes down to, you know, how light do you want your wallet to be, number one? And, you know, are you fine playing, you know, in, you know, like in a smaller setting up close on a monitor? Like I have dual 32-inch 4K monitors. That's what I game on. That's what I edit on or whatever. You know, some people play ultra wide 1440p, things like that. So there's different options available to you depending on what you want to do. You know, if you're a PC gamer, whereas with a console, you know what you're going to get. They're going to tell you what it can do on the box. And when you plug it in, that's what it's going to do. Whereas PC gaming allows you to tinker and experiment with different things. And if you're into that, great. If you're not, I say just go get a console and be done. I mean, the gaming experience is going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, dabbling in the PC world that I have the last 6 months or so, like it's great. But then, you know, like the other caveat is like the plug and play thing is always the biggest deal for me. When you get a new game, like, is it going to run correctly? Sometimes I have to check, like, can I run it or will my PC run it? You know, I don't have a, you know, a super beefed up PC, but I've got a pretty decent, you know, decent rig right now, but it's also been intriguing me to look at, you know, upgrading my graphics card. And, you know, for the, you know, $400 or $500, you know, or, you know, more that I could spend on a graphics card than to get an upgrade for me, like, versus what's coming with next gen consoles. Like, I'm not sure yet. I mean, Sony really has to hit some punches here, because it's not a dig on Microsoft, but whatever they release, I can play.
Right.
So, like, whatever they release, I can play on PC. So it's going to have to be something, and then, you know, or something really great on Series X that it's only going to be on Series X, and that's not going to happen. So it's going to be on Series X and on PC all going forward. Like, that's just the standard. So, like, that's where you have to figure it out. Like, the Sony's, what's going to set Sony apart is their true exclusives.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's, and not that we want to dive into that rabbit hole, but to me, that's the advantage that PlayStation has over Xbox. They have a proven track record at this point with their exclusive lineup, and people will go spend the money to buy a PlayStation to play those games. Whereas I think Microsoft still needs to prove it.
All right, our other question kind of ties into the Ubisoft event. So what do you think happened to the new Watch Dogs? Do you think that Ubisoft delayed it because Breakpoint was received so poorly, or do you think that it was pulled for retooling for new consoles?
I don't think I know. They pulled it because of the disaster that was Breakpoint, and Watch Dogs shared way too many similarities with it, and they realized, this isn't going to work. So they pulled it to retool it.
Because I think you and I have played it, right?
Yeah, I played it at E3. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. Okay. I gave it an award for the previous place I worked
for. Yeah, I mean, ironically enough, yeah, the demo I played was fine. I mean, I thought it was fine, yeah. But I guess under the hood, they were forcing way too many microtransaction-y kind of things in there. And people were going to revolt, so they pulled it.
All right. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I mean, Ubisoft, like, was it just like a month or two ago, they kind of just said, like, hey, we're going to, like, redo how we make our games, because they realize that
they retooled their creative team.
Yeah, so. And I think that probably plays a part in it, just because they were kind of just releasing the same game with a new skin over and over again. Or at least that's how I felt as someone who's not like a huge like fan of their games. Like, I like their games, but like when on the outside looking in, it would be like, okay, Division 2, Breakpoint kind of fill the same void for me, or like the same bucket, if anything.
Yeah.
And if Breakpoint or if Watch Dogs was going to take some stuff from Breakpoint, that would have turned me off because I was kind of interested in Watch Dogs when it first came out, and then it kind of reminded me too much of like Assassin's Creed and didn't live up to the promises of that first trailer for, you know, the original Watch Dogs, and they bastardized Chicago, and then they fixed things for Watch Dogs 2, but again, it just kind of felt like the Far Cry games or like their other games, their Assassin's Creed games, and everything kind of felt the same. So I think last year, it kind of was a bad pun. It was like a breaking point for them in terms of like they kind of hit that wall where it's just like, shit, we can't just make the same thing or have something too similar. And then the microtransaction stuff over the last like 2 years just kind of blew up, and like them having to retool it. I'm not surprised to hear that they just had to retool it. As long as it's just they had to retool the microtransactions and it wasn't like, hey, that cool thing where we're doing with the NPCs, yeah, we're having real trouble getting that to run on current hardware sort of thing, then I'm fine with them like taking the time to fix whatever microtransaction stuff that they were going to put in it. But it looks Randy liked Breaking Point, which is funny.
He said he finished it. I just couldn't bring myself to that right now. And again, I think I'd finish it if I had more people to play the game with. But then the other thing, too, is we're hearing a lot of stuff around Valhalla about them bringing the scope of the game down, like making, you know, not making it as like an Odyssey, as big as Assassin's Creed Odyssey was. So they're kind of maybe linearizing it a little bit more, which I think that it kind of needed, because like I kind of stay away from the Assassin's Creed games because I look at, you know, I watch somebody play it and I look at the map. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good.
Let me tell you about the Witcher.
There's only so many open world games I can handle at certain times. So. And then our last question. So a quick question for the podcast. This is from Thomas Harrison Lord. Do you think Sony is waiting for Last of Us 2 to be released and maybe even Ghost of Tsushima with Iron Man VR before they start talking about PS5, the functionality, the operating system, the games? If they went now, do you think he's wondering if that would hurt? If they start talking PS5 now, would that hurt Last of Us and Ghosts?
No, because The Last of Us 2 was originally supposed to be out in February. So clearly they didn't care then, and they knew the PlayStation 5 was coming out. And even when it was delayed until May. So no, I don't think so personally. I don't think it matters. I think if anything, they can leverage that The Last of Us 2 is backwards compatible on the PlayStation 5 and show off the faster load times. Right? It'd be a marketing chip for him to show, hey, look at this PlayStation 4 game running on a PlayStation 5 and look how faster it loads or whatever.
I just feel like Microsoft and Sony are in this gigantic game of chicken and they're just waiting for somebody to swerve.
Yep, I agree. I think that's exactly what's happening. I was just,
and eventually if they don't swerve, they're going to collide and it's going to hurt them both.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with the price. They're clearly playing a game of chicken on the price right now. I'll just keep it short and sweet because I was just talking about this on another podcast earlier. I think ultimately, I do think Microsoft says their price first. And I think the Series X is going to be $499. And if Lockhart really is a thing, I think it'll be $299. And I think when the PlayStation 5 does say their price, it's going to be $450. That's what I think it'll ultimately wind up being.
So we haven't really talked about it. So just briefly, like 30 second, what is Lockhart?
That is the low cost alternate next gen console for the Xbox. It'll most likely be called the Xbox Series S. So like right now you have the Xbox One S and then you have the Xbox One X. Uh-huh. It'll be the same thing with the Series. You'll have a Series S, which will be a low cost option. It'll probably still have the same fast load time, but a lower clock CPU, lower clock GPU, maybe do some quasi 4K with checkerboard rendering or something like that. But it won't be the same experience that you can potentially get on the Series X with native 4K, 60 frames, ray tracing and all that stuff. That's the guess. And, you know, it's all rumor until they actually show it and they talk about it. But I will say this. You won't see Lockhart until they're ready to say the price, because the whole point of it is the price. Other than that, why would anyone get it?
Right.
Yeah.
Michael, what do you think about the marketing scheme around the newer PS4 games before you talk PS5?
Yeah, so I don't think you can hurt The Last of Us, like, at all at this point, in terms of, like, the fans that want The Last of Us are buying it. It will sell well regardless of the PS5 coming. The only game I can see get, like, quote-unquote, like, hurt under this is Ghost in terms of like how much marketing push it's going to get, because it releases like 3 weeks after The Last of Us. But I also don't think Sony has huge expectations for Ghost. I have a feeling it's just going to be one of those games. It's probably going to be good, but I don't...
I think it's going to be a slow burn like Days Gone.
Yeah, hopefully a little better than Days Gone.
Yeah, but... no, but I meant in terms of, like, Days Gone had a rough review, but then when more people started playing it, it got, you know, more praise, and, you know, people were talking about it later, and then it's kind of like a getting, you know, it's there, and I think Ghost hopefully will start out much faster than that, but I think it's going to be one of those things like, hey, you really need to check it out. You know?
Yeah, I just, when I see Ghost, I see it almost as like just a prestige piece of something like Sucker Punch. It's like, can we just not make an Infamous game? And Sony's like, okay, here, just make this, make whatever dream project, here's your budget, and then that's Ghost. And Sucker Punch is then now working probably on something bigger than Ghost for the next gen console. I almost see it as like a prestige thing. And I don't think their expectations are like huge for Ghost sales wise, which is why it's fit right in right after The Last of Us, just a couple weeks. And then hopefully when we get the PS5, like avalanche of news, to where it's like, if it hurts Ghost, it's fine. It's not like it's going to hurt Sucker Punch. Like, Sucker Punch isn't going to go away from, like, if Ghost doesn't sell amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think The Last of Us is like, that game's like bulletproof in terms of the sales for the fans that it already has, despite all the leaks and all the weird stuff with that.
All right. Well, so I didn't think we'd actually get through all the questions, but we did. So, you know, appreciate you taking the time, Paris. We're going to wrap the show up. The spotlight is Paris as well. Like, we spotlight our guests. So the spotlight for this is Paris. I will make sure that all of his social stuff is linked into the show notes. Check him out on YouTube. Follow him on Twitter. He's a fascinating follow on Twitter if you just want to just scroll his timeline just to laugh sometimes.
Just make sure you do the tweet and replies thing just so you can see him having back and forth with people.
Yeah, because this back and forth can be interesting, especially when somebody motivates him to do a video.
Oh, well, that's just people being idiots with this whole freaking console war thing. So, because I'll say this real quick before we go, and again, thank you guys for having me on. One day I hate Xbox, one day I hate PlayStation, because, you know, I really don't care either way. It's like, hey, I just want to play great games. So if I talk great about one, the other side gets mad. If I talk bad about the other side gets mad. So I always get these every now and again. Well, so, well, you don't even own an Xbox, or you don't even own a PlayStation. And then I'll just make a video. Oh, really? And I show them my PlayStation and Xbox and Switch. It's like, dude, I own them all. That's why I have an opinion. And people can't look, people have to defend brands, I guess. They have this weird brand loyalty where it has to be PlayStation, or if you like Xbox, you're wrong. My thing is simple. Just love gaming. If you love gaming, it shouldn't matter which one you pick up. Just play the games where your friends are. That's all that should matter. But people on social media tend to get upset with that. But I will say this, the interaction thing, I've decided to stop doing that so much, because it's pointless. It's like, you know, you just tweet what you tweet and don't worry about the responses, because you're not going to change anyone's mind. You got to look at it that way. So just say what you got to say and move on.
So we're going to just keep it like pretty much brief. Like, our social links are in there. Follow us on all the platforms. The Twitter account at Digital Days Pod. Paris, your Twitter?
It is Vicious696.
Just look at our tweets. We tweeted a couple days ago, and then as we're promoting the show, we'll definitely have his Twitter handle in there. Go ahead and give him a follow. Definitely listen to Gamertag Radio. It's a huge influence for DDG. It's a huge influence in terms of the gaming world, and it's just one of those industry standards out there. Our socials, join the Facebook group. Everything will be in the podcast in the show notes. So follow Michael, follow myself, Patreon. We've gotten some really cool Patreon support the last couple of weeks, so thank you guys so much for that. It helps in tremendous ways of us paying bills and doing upgrades to stuff that we need to do. And the support that we've gotten has been tremendous, along with the bonus episode that we have for the month of May. If you want to hear retail story lives about Michael and myself, both working in retail as long as we have, be sure to check that out. And then the tiers, like $3 for Discord, $5 for early access, $7 for the bonus content. And like I mentioned to Paris, like all of his links will be in the show notes. And again, Paris, thank you so much for taking the time. I know I went a little bit over on your time. I apologize.
No worries at all.
So I hope everyone has a great week. Please stay safe. Take care of yourselves. Wash your hands. Do what you can to help keep everybody safe so that we can be back to normal sooner than later. Oh, yeah. I would love to be able to, you know, shake Paris's hand and give him a hug at another event sooner rather than later. And I would love to be able to see Michael again sooner rather than later. We were supposed to possibly see each other in March for an event, and that got canceled, because of COVID. So I hope everyone has a great week and just keep moving forward.
See you.